Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. At its best, masculinity conveys strength, confidence, and determination. But it requires a healthy balance. There are those who link the worst traits of masculinity with problems such as physical or emotional abuse. Coming up, we'll hear from a group of Native men who know firsthand the trappings of masculinity. We'll get tips on some of the ways traditional teachings can guide Native men toward maintaining strong, healthy relationships. That's right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of a First Nation in Manitoba have returned to their homes on a reserve after years away. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the reserve at Lake St. Martin was ravaged in 2011.
The return home is being described as a trickle. Dozens of families have been coming home after the houses in their community were destroyed by heavy spring floods more than 6 years ago. The reserve housed 1,400 people. During the past 6 years, many stayed in hotels or in short-term rental units in the city of Winnipeg and other communities. The cost of their temporary housing reached more than $160 million. Now many have the keys to their new homes and celebrated their return. But some of the celebrations are muted because of the human cost of the displacement. More than 100 band members have died over the past few years, some from suicide. And some, like band member and university researcher Merle Ballard, are still looking for answers, such as why it took 6 years to rebuild the community.
This is the 21st century, and, you know, this is still happening. People are being displaced. They're being sacrificed for the non-Indigenous people.
The first phase of the recent rebuilding of 190 new homes will be completed by the end of January, and the government says it's committed to completing the work to get all those who were displaced home. Meanwhile, Lake St. Martin is still waiting for part of a $90 million settlement they and other First Nations filed against the federal and provincial governments. They claim that the province of Manitoba caused the flooding knowingly and recklessly by pushing excessive amounts of floodwater into Lake Manitoba. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
An Indian Health Service representative says the agency is working to address issues at the Pine Ridge Hospital in South Dakota, which will lose its Medicaid funding this month. Elizabeth Fowler with IHS told the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs Wednesday, right now there are no direct actions to halt the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services from terminating its agreement. She says the IHS is considering next steps to address staffing levels and other urgent issues. The hospital received notice about the funding cut last week following a recent survey. Tribal leaders in the Great Plains region say they support proposed legislation for an assessment of health care nationwide at Indian Health Service hospitals. Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Chairman Dave Flute told the committee tribes need to be consulted.
The accountability and transparency that we're looking for is, and it all goes back to consultation and just good communication with the tribes. Tribes are trying to help figure out what is going on in all areas. And I apologize to you, Mr. Chairman, that there is, in my opinion, there is no one that is greater than the other. It all has to do with quality of service. And we're just not getting the answers. Consultation is not there. We try to reach out and communicate, and we just don't get the answers that we're looking for.
Earlier this year, the independent outside audit of the Indian Health Service Act was introduced. Currently, there is no House companion bill. The Indian Affairs Committee Wednesday also heard testimony on the STOP Act, which would prohibit the export of sacred items and increase penalties for stealing and trafficking items. Governor Kurt Riley from Acoma Pueblo told the committee tribal people are the knowledge keepers who know the difference between art and sacred items.
Who is the cultural expert here? Whenever you ask that, it is the individual Pueblos, tribes, and nations who are experts of their own culture rather than someone else who has studied our culture. They are not experts.
The Pueblo has been working with various governments to get a sacred item returned home from overseas. Riley says having the backing of federal law would help tribes in their repatriation efforts. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support provided by Freedom Lodge. Is historical trauma a concern in your community? You can join our Historical Trauma Master Class beginning February 2018. Registration deadline is December 1 at freedomlodge.org. Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, crafts, supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets. Holiday delivery on orders placed at drumbeatindianarts.com by December 15th.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The recent public accusations of harassment by movie mogul Harvey Weinstein triggered a cascade of additional accounts of similar behavior by other men in power. Since then, new revelations have surfaced almost daily against actors, business leaders, and even a top news editor at National Public Radio. But it's not just men in power who overstep their bounds. Today we are talking to men about men and what toxic masculinity means for Native men. Our guests are well-versed in the subject, and they point out that if it's not adequately addressed, toxic masculinity comes out in relationships with women and other men. It can affect your job and even your physical health. Our conversation today owes a debt to Dallas Goldtooth, who originally organized a discussion on this topic in a Facebook Live forum. And we'll get a link on our website after our program if you want to watch the full discussion. But today, we also want to hear from our radio audience. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE and share your thoughts with us. We're going to start off by welcoming in Greg Greycloud to the program. He is the co-founder of Weecha Ugly, and he is a member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, and he joins us today from Mission, South Dakota. Greg, it's our pleasure to have you with us.
No, it's a pleasure to be here with you all.
And Greg, before we meet a couple of the fellas you sat down and thought out loud with, I'd like to do a little bit of defining. When we say toxic masculinity, what is it we're saying?
Well, coming from where we come from on the reservation and the place that we are, toxic masculinity comes from a behavior or a belief that toxic masculinity is an aggressive behavior towards not just other men, but everybody in general, comes from a belief that it is a protection from us having us as men having to deal with situations regarding feelings, regarding expressing and compromise.
And so the people who study this, what do they say as to why it exists?
A lot of different forms. There's different forms of masculinity and why a man would express a lot of aggression towards somebody else. What we learn here in our communities and doing men's education classes for nearly 5 years is that the behaviors are coming from something that didn't necessarily start from out of nowhere, out of the blue. It comes from a learned behavior. It comes from the ability of protecting oneself that a man will learn at a young age that being aggressive will protect him from feeling unsafe, feeling afraid, feeling alone. As far as the national studies in other areas, I wouldn't quite know. In other backgrounds, in the ethnicities, like I said, we learn toxic masculinity here in the Native communities that we live in. That's where it comes from.
And Greg, how important is it that we jump into conversations like this, especially in our tribal communities?
Oh, man, that's very important. A lot of what we deal with in tribal communities, such as politics, people in power positions, men, specifically men, towards in the community that are driving, that seem to be a driving force in speaking out and aggressively and making people feel unsafe. I mean, it's very important that we understand and learn where our mass toxic masculinity comes from, because then we'll be able to work with alongside women as equals and push forward in our society in a better manner.
All right. Thank you for that. With us today, we have Greg Greycloud. He is the co-founder of Wicha Ugly, a member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. If there's anything you'd like to share, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're talking about toxic masculinity. Have you ever heard that term? What does it make you think of? And what is it related to? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Greg, we're going to say hello to a couple of more voices that are with us today. We're going to go to Duluth, Minnesota to say hello to Jeremy Neville Sorrell, and he is the Training and Resource Director with the Mending the Sacred Hoop. He is Ojibwe and Winnebago. Jeremy, it's our pleasure to have you on the line.
Hey, thank you.
And also with us, we have Aldo Seoane joining us today from Ventura, California. He is the co-founder of Wicha Ugly, and he is UMA. It's our pleasure to have Aldo on the line. Aldo, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
And gentlemen, just joining in, I want to get your thoughts too, why you feel this conversation is important, needed, or maybe you see it as lacking. Jeremy, start us off.
I think the issue, like, this is a relatively new topic for Native communities. And so as we introduce the topic, even the term, right, we talk about toxic masculinity, it's comes from an academic term. And as we introduce it, it's that trending over. And so how do we match this, match it up with what's going on and what we see in our own communities? And that was when we first did the call, that was the biggest thing people had trouble understanding. And so as we continue to do this and we want to organize around this topic, you know, it really comes down to how we are as men, being healthy men. And that's what we're, so it's healthy versus unhealthy. And when you think of like what we need in our communities and what our traditional teachings and ways were, it was always to be the best person that you could be. And that our communities were raising us that way, right? And so all the way up, we were prepared as young children, all the way up through the developmental stages into puberty and into adulthood, we were all trained and prepped to be good men and be contributors and be good providers. With the erosion of our culture, we end up with, we got this by default. You get things by default, and now there's privileges or entitlements. You know, if you live long enough, you can earn these things or expect these things. If you live long enough, you can drive a car. If you live long enough, you can go out and earn your own money. You can vote. You can drink. You can do these other things. You don't earn any of those privileges anymore versus going back to our traditional ways of how is it that you earn something? If you get a job in a position of authority, you instantly get that power. And so we have to shift that mindset back to say, how do we earn things as men in our community? And so we got a lot that's for granted now. You know, Greg is talking about that with people in power and how they abuse power. But before, you were given power by the community, and that was able to be taken away from you. So as men and the three of us talking about this, we really want to bring that back into the way that we're socializing each mm-hmm. other as men or as a community.
Mm-hmm. Folks, what do you think? Do you think some of this is missing? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Jeremy, it's interesting when we start talking about this and thinking about, okay, where does some of this start? And there was a really great moment in your discussion where the term how to be a man came up. And I was thinking about what we do here in our tribal communities, especially what we're telling young men and young women. A lot of times you hear that term, this is what you need to do. How do you be a man? But yet when we're talking to women, we talk about when you become a woman or when you enter womanhood. And so those are two different ways to raise people and talk about this. And so I want to hear your thoughts on that, of where this comes from and some of the things we talk about, or even that term, this is how you be a man. Go ahead, Jeremy.
we have jokes about that, gender roles, like all, you know, back and forth, you know, find a woman that can make you good fry bread and things like that. And that's part of that socializing that happens. And it's somehow along the line we adopted these strict gender roles of who does what where. But when we go back and look at it and unpack it, so how do we bring this back? Like, you know, we talk about in Ojibwe culture, divorce was just as simple as putting his moccasins outside of the home, right? And the women owned the property. They had all the stuff. There's privileges. Men went to, when they married, they moved with her family. And those were social structures of support. And now it's very different when you look at marriage and moving and who does what and ownership and all those things. And so it's these things that we have to really realize that we are both men and women socialized. We treat girls differently as infants. We give them a lot of cuddling and hugs and talk very soft. And boys, we're very rough. We are, you know, even the playful stuff that we subconsciously do these things. That, you know, it's very normal, and we don't think about what we do. And then how many people sit there and think, I mean, even the term when single parents say, I'm both mom and dad, we have that in our belief system nowadays versus way back traditionally. It wasn't about the mom, dad, nuclear family. It was about relatives and community, aunts, uncles. Everyone else had a role in that child's life and upbringing. And we don't have that anymore.
And so how do you think that plays directly into why we see toxic behaviors, or as some have termed it, toxic masculinity?
Well, you need to have that some very specific guidance and roles and teaching responsibility. You know, if someone's being held accountable by an uncle, and that's our traditional uncle role, is that be that disciplinary person in that child's life, you help get that guidance. And, you know, and for children, when they talk about violence and children exposed to violence, what's a resilience factor? It's having stable adults around. And it's not just men or women for boys and girls respectively. It's about having the number of healthy, caring adults who have a positive influence on that child. So when you're out on the reservation, there's alcoholism, there's violence, there's suicide, there's all the health conditions, there's the poverty. As long as you have some healthy, caring adults who really connect with you as a child, you have the possibility of surviving that and having good outcomes. But if you're absorbed into all that negativity, that's what you're going to carry with. You know, like Greg was saying that, you know, we pick up on those things, and that's how we learn how to behave and navigate. We have to put up these shells and barriers so that we're not vulnerable. That's people put up that front, that fake face, and put that image out there, so that they have to be tough and be something different and can't really connect with who they are as a person, as a human being.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy. Aldo, I want to hear what you're thinking. But again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Aldo, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, these issues are there's a lot of intersections that play into this, you know, and there's a lot of ways that we look at it. The accountability piece that Jeremy was talking when you're assuming leadership role and how it's tied back to the community. You know, if we look at our life, we let a lot of fear drive, not only resources, but money. Look at the perception and how that impacts how we feel that we're a part of the community.
Mm-hmm. Aldo, hang tight. We're having a hard time hearing you. Let's see if we can get a better connection. But Greg, I'm going to toss it to you. I heard him say some of this is based in fear. Anything you want to trigger off that?
I mean, like I said, depending on where you're coming from, but learning and working in the community I am here and growing up in the community I did, we've been offering the classes for nearly 5 years now. Based on fear, we as men learn that, like how Brother Jeremy was saying, a lot of it is fear-based. So we gain the fear, and we learn fear at a young age. Fear is in an embodiment of how one was raised in an unhealthy environment. And when we look at the definition of masculinity, I mean, masculinity is both socially defined and biologically created. biologically created, meaning it was passed down, and behaviors that were shown, that were learned, and socially defined. Men learn in the community as young ages. We learn that it seems to be a contest in every way, shape, and form. Masculinity is not the problem, but the toxic masculinity is fear-based, like he's saying, and it comes from being afraid of not being equal to other men, not fitting in socially with groups of boys or men around you. Growing up, it'll come from bullying, anything that would make a young man, a young boy, and is growing and learning will make him afraid. We'll have him display a lot of aggressive behaviors. And like I said, it was fear-based and socially defined and biologically created. I mean, I think that's where it might be, where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we got Aldo back. Aldo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow, you sound way clear. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
So, you know, along the same lines that Brother's talking about, you know, it's about fitting in, it's about community, and we've adopted a lot of traits and a lot of definitions that don't necessarily fit our community, even the definitions of what violent men are and the family structures, for instance, just like Jeremy was saying, you know, a lot of us, you know, are raised by our mothers and don't have fathers around. So even to hear that, you know, this is what a normal family is supposed to be, when we look at our own community and that doesn't reflect our community, you know, we start to feel bad about ourselves. And that internalized depression comes out in a lot of ways. And a lot of that is around violence. And we're just taught in that system of it being entitled, that anybody who challenges our position is someone that we have to, is a threat to us in our understanding. And I think ultimately we've left that understanding of community, and the communities in the center of our family structures and of all of our thinking processes and behaviors. And because we're not accountable to the community and we're just living inside our little houses, we're forgetting our responsibility to our grandchildren and nieces and nephews that don't live under our home. So we're allowing these types of behaviors to fill our communities and become the norm. And that's what we have to take back, is engaging in those conversations and creating those communal structures where adverse behavior doesn't have a place to exist.
All right. Thank you for that, Aldo. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And gentlemen, I want to make clear, this is not an attack on masculinity. There are positive things that come with it. But do you feel that that element or that statement gets lost sometimes when we start talking about a toxic side? Greg, any thoughts?
I mean, anybody will jump on a defense if they feel that it offends them, or it might even be referencing them in general in any type of behavior. There's no attack on masculinity. There's nothing wrong with masculinity, especially in Native communities. Men, elders, middle-aged men, and even boys, we learn that teasing each other isn't necessarily attacking somebody, but at the same time, teaching us something about a behavior that we're portraying or that we're expressing or showing towards somebody. If it's an unhealthy behavior, then we'll get teased by an uncle or a grandpa about that type of behavior, which is bringing a part of a healthy type of shaming somebody, letting them know that your behavior is unacceptable, but we're making light of it so it's not putting you down or you don't return in anger or aggressively. I mean, when we're talking about that, it's definitely something that masculinity is actually really very, very, very good for a man. It's all attributes and behaviors that we as men show or express or are. But the toxic masculinity, when it's in aggression, when it's directed directly towards somebody, and if you're acting out in a form or a way to hurt somebody else's feelings, or put them down and make them feel less, or it's a form of hierarchy in our communities, and then it becomes toxic, and that should be unacceptable. And instead of, like I said, it was socially derived, is healthy masculinity. So we can, at the same time, learn as a society, and socially we can fix toxic masculinity within ourselves as men.
All right. Thank you for that. Greg Greycloud on the line. Also, Aldo Sione, as well as Jeremy Neville Sorrell. We are asking them about toxic masculinity. Anything you want to add, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Jeremy, for somebody who might not be clear, and, you know, we are throwing terms out there, you know, what exactly are we talking about when we say examples, or, you know, what this is about, or when it gets toxic? You know, explain a little bit more so people are clear exactly what we're talking about.
There's the parts that, you know, Greg is talking about how we as men set up the social conditioning for other men. And it's that power dominance. When we live in a society that pushes everyone to be at that top of that pyramid, to, you know, king of the mountain, king of the castle, everything, you know, we got all kinds of terms that we believe in. You know, there's too many chiefs, not enough Indians, someone has to wear the pants, someone holds purse strings. There's always something about someone needing to be in charge, and we all are funneled into that way of thinking versus how are we contributors to something being done for the benefit of the community. Like, those are very different concepts that we live in nowadays versus way back in the day. And so the toxic part in talking about the masculinity is talking about both. Not only is it our sexism, so as the work that we're trying to do with Charles Glee, Mending the Sacred Hoop, we're trying to address the sexism that exists in society and male privilege. And that's part of the stuff that we all as men carry that nowadays. But when we get challenged by women and other men who are changing that, we have to look at our reaction and what are we responding to, and where is that coming from, what our defenses are. And at the same time, we have to respect women, and when we hear it, to listen to it. You know, I know men get combative and argumentative and all that, but it's something that we have to take into consideration if we want to change society and community. And at the other part of it, on the other side, is how are we being role models to other men? You know, we have to deal with these things. I have three boys, and so I have to very consciously make decisions in my everyday life. Like, I don't, you know, my boys, the youngest one is 17 now, but even dating, like, how do I refrain from making those jokes? Even the comments, oh, did you kiss that girl and things like that. People make subtle things like that. When they were little, we go through the drive-thru, get a Happy Meal. I never said, do you want the boy toy or the girl toy? I was conscious and said, do you want the Hot Wheels or the Barbie? There's very specific things that we have to be conscious of. Making changes in our daily lives, and how will we support these ways of socialization for both genders? And if we're not going to step out and be active and participate and show up, at minimum, we have to make those changes in our lives. When our babies fall down, our little boys fall down and get hurt, we don't tell them to just brush it off and not to cry. You know, we have to give them that and embrace them and give them that hug and that compassion. And we also have to continue to give our sons hugs and compassion when they're teenagers. That's a very lonely time. And very
all right,
confusing.
Jeremy, hang tight. We got to go to break here. We'll pick that up right after the break. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. We know you're thinking something. Share a little of it. Our phone lines are open. We look forward to hearing from you. Indigenous heroes play an important role in saving the universe and diversifying the world of comic books, video games, and movies. We'll be broadcasting live from the Indigenous Comic-Con 2, and we'll be talking with Native comic book creators and fans. Join us for the next Native America Calling.
Oh, hey, 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 hey Paka, damakamang youth aknicht lachtut, ayagayot anga yu kamang insurance saga ni widayuk ngout ashagung nat kamagunan yuinak akavin lugnak chipluku, kasu ismagnak pikamagnak imiri luteng, ilout sakak iking kaukwivik 15 aknat kanun, kayagaukluku 1-800-318-2596, kasu bakluku go.cms.gov/nativehealth, una kingunang kaktuk Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, crafts, supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets. Holiday delivery on orders placed at drumbeatindianarts.com by December 15th. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are glad you're part of our discussion. If you'd like to hear today's show or any past discussions once again, and you don't get a chance to express yourself, you can tune in on our website, hear the archive, and then you can continue to join the conversation online by leaving us a comment directly at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can also send us a message by searching for us on Facebook or reach out to us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Today we are talking about toxic masculinity, and that's not an actual medical diagnosis, but it's a phrase that people use to describe a set of problems associated with men. Our guests today are talking about how some men try to inappropriately use their power and control in a way that can victimize others. What's your take on toxic masculinity? Is there something missing in that description? Give us a call and join the conversation at 1-800-996-2848. With us today from Ventura, California is Aldo Cioane, and he is the co-founder of Wicha Agli. He is Uemi. Also here with us today from Duluth, Minnesota, is Jeremy Neville Sorrell. He's the Training and Resource Director with Mending the Sacred Hoop. He is Ojibwe and Winnebago. And also with us today from Mission, South Dakota, is Greg Gray Cloud. And he is another co-founder of Wicha Agli and a member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. Gentlemen, it is our pleasure to have you here with us and taking us closer to this discussion. Jeremy, before the break, we had to whip it up real quick and wanted to give you a moment to finish your thoughts. You were also talking about how, you know, this varies between the ages, including our teens. Go ahead, Jeremy, finish your thought.
Yes. I was going to add on that, you know, we usually have a disconnect with boys as they transition into manhood, and we still need to carry that compassion and show that and demonstrate that versus try to get them to be tough. And that's what we tend to do, is like we try to toughen them up to prepare them for the world and send them off as men.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. We got a caller. Let's go ahead and welcome in Virgil in Standing Rock, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Virgil, thank you for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Good morning. Good afternoon. This is Virgil, taking live from Standing Rock. Actually, the South Dakota side of Standing Rock. And I am enjoying this conversation so much. The points that are made by these young men are right on. And the one thing that I've been doing here at home is not using the negative connotations of the English language. First of all, understanding that when an individual says reservation, that has negative connotations. So here I promote the use of homelands, our home. This is our home. And then the other part of that is, too, and I like the emphasis put on the words power and authority. When an individual, man or woman alike, assumes a position due to election or due to age, it's not a position of power or authority. It's a position of responsibility. And the points that these young men are making are right on. As we start relearning who we are and decolonizing, de-assimilating, all of these things, the prayers and thoughts of all the elders from generations past are now coming to fruition. And I can't say enough about these young men and what they're sharing with the listeners nationwide this day today, and the roles, the responsibility that we take as we get older and as we learn in our homes. You know, it's so invigorating and just so encouraging. I want to say thank you to these young men for bringing these views out. And again, you know, get away from reservation, get back to talk about homelands, get away from the word power and authority to responsibility. And I encourage you young men to continue on. And I know I'm friends with Aldo on Facebook, and I'll continue the conversation. But thank you, young men, for your words this day today. I greatly appreciate them.
All right, Virgil, great to hear from you there in Standing Rock. Join us, too, at 1-800-996-2848. Aldo, anything you want to tell Virgil?
Well, of course, I want to say thank you, Lexi, for that support. I think one thing he brought up that was really important is language. And, you know, like to use homeland or self-identifying our behavior. If we go back to a lot of our indigenous languages, they talk about relationship and how we're accountable to each other. So if we do call someone uncle or auntie or brother or cousin, we're actually living by those protocols that are set there. And when we use those relationship terms, those kinship terms, it reminds us of our sense of responsibility and duty. And we pulled away from that. You know, when we're doing the work with the boys and with the men in the community, we try and use those relative terms so that people feel supported and loved and not judged when they're sharing with you. You know, we need to rebuild some of those kinship relationships and redefine them, because we've adopted ones that aren't necessarily part of our culture. And lastly, I think it's important to say is when we look at our own cultural practices, taking the time to take the next step as to understanding why we do things and why we did things, and really explore those different relationships and agreements that we make when we enter into certain responsibilities, because we need to go back to being raised by a community so that way, no matter what happens in our life, we're always supported in that process of growth.
All right. Thank you, Aldo. We're going to go back to the phone lines to say hello to Brenda, who called 1-800-99-NATIVE. She's in Deering, Alaska, tuned in on KOTZ. Brenda, thank you for calling. Go ahead. You're on air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I just wanted to know how you guys teach your boys about dealing with grief and loss, and I'll hang up and listen to your reply on the radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brenda. Again, 1-800-99-NATIVE is the way to reach us. Jeremy, go ahead. Your thoughts.
It's a lot of it's that role modeling. How we interact and how I interact with their mom is going to be the first place that they see it. Just real quick, when we were first together, and my oldest boy was really young, we were watching this movie Casino, and it showed this fight scene where the woman was getting beat up, and our son was by the TV sitting at his table coloring, and he didn't even look. So we looked at each other, was like, ooh, and paused it real quick because we didn't want him exposed to that. And without even lifting up his head, he just said, "You two would never do that," and continued on coloring. And those kind of examples were like, wow, you realize you're doing something good. And it's just by demonstrating that and being compassionate, you know, try not to call them names, try not to encourage them to call each other names, and, you know, and be responsible yourself. You know, and as a man, you have to be responsible. Like, you see a bunch of guys running around in the store and they're pushing the shopping cart, jumping on it, riding around, acting immature and that, like those kind of things. Yes, I love to do that kind of stuff. But it's also the same thing that I know when I'm consciously out there with my kids that I have to be that example and I have to demonstrate those respectful interactions, particularly with women.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, something also about interactions. And, Greg, I want to turn to you. You know, having this kind of conversation on a national audience, and sometimes we see, you know, mainstream media or popular culture take on some of this. Sometimes it's funny in a movie. Other times it's reports, statistics, but take us directly to our Native communities. When we start having conversations like this, what starts happening? You know, is everybody signing up to be there to hear this discussion? You know, tell me more. What happens when we put this directly in our tribal communities? Greg?
Well, I think it's more impacted by, the audience that's impacted is more the adults. As the youth, say from grade 6 to grade 12, which we work with in the community, the young men will see the popular society as a social society as cool or fun, or that's what you do to fit in. And people also think that it's different to be that way or act that way. So they don't want to hear such a boring conversation as like, well, all those same behaviors you think are cool and fun and awesome from all these celebrities and stuff is also unhealthy. And it's not how you treat other people, especially women. They're not wanting to have that conversation. So our conversations are more with the men that will see, the women that will understand and also support us in making these, creating these spaces and these platforms here. But with the young boys, whenever they're in some type of trouble or behavioral punishments, that's when they start to see. Those are the types of conversations we have with them as far as our decision-making and allowing them to make their own choices and healthy choices and not-so-healthy choices regarding their own behaviors. And we break down the understanding and beliefs of where that comes from within their own decisions and why they act that way or why they chose to act maybe disrespectful to essentially get them in trouble. We break those down with them. And that's where it's more magnated in that sense when we're working with young boys in the JDC. Working with young boys who are going through difficulties and don't necessarily understand. And so that's, we don't necessarily just target that. We also want to target the ones who aren't getting in trouble to help them understand that, okay, teasing is one thing, but when you start hurting other people's feelings, it's different. So it doesn't necessarily apply in that sense, but it does if they're looking for something and looking for change.
And Greg, is there any pushback of somebody says, why are you talking about this? Or the teasing amplifies of, oh, you're going to that meeting or you're going to go talk to those people. Is there ever any kind of pushback? And how do you address it, Greg?
There's pushback in everything. But regarding this toxic masculinity that we're doing in the community, in this community, not so much, because we're here in the community, we're hands-on, we do stuff people realize and see the work that we're doing in our community. Also, we're working directly in partnership with the White Buffalo Cap Women's Society. But regarding our all-Native male organization coming into a movement of violence prevention, where it's majority women in that movement, there's not necessarily pushback, but there's skepticism, but for good reason. Essentially, there's this movement here because of violence against women, violence coming from men, Native men, a lot of our people of color. And when you have an all-Native organization, Native male organization coming into it, it's a little skeptic as far as trust, and we understand that. That's why we're nephews in this movement. We're younger brothers in this movement. We're by no means trying to take over, but we're trying to help and stand with women and asking permission to stand alongside of them within their platform to essentially bring a sense of equality and show a healthy conversation and dynamics between men and women.
Mm-hmm. And Jeremy, what are you seeing in the work you're doing?
You know, I want to just add one more thing to the thing about the youth. As Brother Greg was talking there, it just triggered a thought in the head. When we work with youth, and we've done youth groups and events in the past, what we tend to think of boys as young perpetrators. And we don't think of them as children themselves who are learning. And so oftentimes when if we want to teach that compassion, and that growth and all of that, and be and have them grow up to be healthy, we also have to get our mindset away from targeting them as potential perpetrators, because that's what tends to happen, you know. And sometimes we go for the low-hanging fruit when we do organizing. We find the kids that are in trouble and target them. And Greg points out a good thing that, we need to find the kids who are not getting in trouble and have that conversation, because sometimes those are the kids who get in the most trouble later on because they didn't have any of those opportunities. And that going back to our ways, our teaching, our traditions, we didn't tell people what not to do. We guided people on what to do. So, a kid running around the pool, if you say, don't run, don't run, don't run, don't run, all they hear is run. Versus they're walking around a pool. You say, we want you to walk, 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 walk. We guide them on what to do, you know. And so that even though there's elements of risk, safety, and all these other things we're concerned about with running around a wet surface area, but if you teach them to walk and tell them you want them to walk, they're going to be thinking more on what you want them to do. So like the caller who called in said, language is important. We focus on what we want to do, the positive behaviors, and that's critical.
Aldo, anything to add?
I think that one of the things that I heard from that question was that part of making the conversation and bringing it to the communities through these airwaves, through any way possible, is needed to allow men to know that there's a safe space to have this conversation. I think we need to have more of that. I think when we're talking to two men, yeah, like Jeremy's saying, sometimes we look at our youth as young perpetrators because that's how the grants are driving the work in our communities. They're looking to create the outcomes, not really provide solutions. So we have to navigate that. I also think there's a disconnection between men in our communities that have caused violence and children. So, you know, what we talk about when we say, you know, working to end violence against women and children, it's because those boys are going to become men. So we have to show them that compassion and model that behavior. And ultimately, that's the ticket right there, is how many people can we bring into our communities that can begin to, again, model proper behavior. And that happens with these conversations. So I'm really grateful to your show for allowing us to continue these conversations, to explore these things, and to be able to let men know you need to talk, you need to stand up, you need to be able to have the hard conversations with your bros and say, that's not appropriate. Nephew, stop that. And I think, you know, part of this is that we get to model some of that behavior on the airwaves.
And I think you're also, and we've mentioned it a couple of times, about privilege playing into this. And what exactly do we mean when we say, you know, taking advantage of privilege? Greg, take us there.
When we as men take advantage of privilege is when we show up into a meeting or when we show up into the community where there are men and women both present. But if you're given a platform to speak, we take over that platform and not realizing or seeing that are not even wanting other people to be involved in that. We take over the conversation that only my opinion and my point is valid, not yours. So you might not necessarily clearly say that, but your actions and ability to take over an entire conversation shows that you don't think our opinions are what we say is valid. So that's what we mean by taking advantage of privilege, I believe is what Brother Aldo was also meaning to. And we see that every day in every community, every Native community, non-Native community. But it becomes a problem here when we're continuing to be on the defense all the time and we don't see other people's feelings equal to ours.
And so, Greg, start us off, too. You know, how do we put this kind of privilege in check? Is it from the individual? Is it together? Go ahead.
It takes a long time from the individual to realize that he is taking advantage of his privilege. It takes a long time for a man to admit that he is wrong and what his behaviors are is unhealthy. A lot of that will come from accountability from friends, such as Jeremy and Aldo, brothers here. We'll keep each other in check. We'll keep each other's words. We'll keep them accountable, such as me. I'm the younger brother out of the three, two brothers. We're not blood related. We're friends, but we call each other brothers to essentially give each other that permission to, if I do wrong, you have the ability to correct me, and I will take it with a grain of salt, and I will understand why you're correcting me. Me as a younger brother, I think the change will come from helping
your friend's accountability, holding your friends accountable, and realizing that it's not an attack, but it's a correction.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Jeremy, anything you want to add about privilege?
I think the privilege is the hardest one to understand, particularly as Native men. And if we grow up poor, we don't have the best education. So you look at the religious dominance as Christianity, the people that are wealthy and the people that are white. Those are things that we're like, we don't fit into those boxes, and so we don't see it as ourselves. But we still, as men, get to walk around with different carry ourselves out there in the community. We are still not afraid of people the same way. Like, we don't have to be afraid of other men the same way women do. And we don't sit there and lock our doors the same way. We don't have the same thought process of how I'm being safe when I travel. We travel all over the place, where I'm going at night. Those are very different things when it affects your daily life. And so some of that is the real simple to the very overt of who gets to speak. Who gets to speak first, and how much one man can change the room of 50 women just by his statements.
Thank you for that. Again, and folks, if you would like to connect with any of these folks, we have contacts on our website. But gentlemen, go ahead and give out information on how people do connect with you. Jeremy, go ahead.
I could be reached at Mending the Sacred Hoop. There's a mshoop.org, M-S-H-O-O-P. There's a contact page, real easy to find me, jeremy@mshoop.org. I'm like Tigger. There's only one Jeremy Neville Sorrell in the world. Google me, you'll find me.
All right. And Aldo, where do people connect with Weecha Ugly?
You can get a hold of us at WICAAGLI.org, WeechaUgly.org. You can find us on Facebook. You can inbox Greg or me on Facebook. And you can Google all of us, and our info comes up.
All right. Thank you for that. And so I think we have done a great job of putting light on this topic. But moving forward, let's end with talking about using masculinity in a positive way. Aldo, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think in a positive way, it's to remember to turn to our aunties and ask for direction and guidance and to model that behavior. So for me, that's the biggest thing. The biggest thing we can do is modeling behavior and asking the women in the room what they want to see in order to create those places of safety and comfort, and to know that we can do that. And I think as men, that's our charge. You know, I was brought up with the understanding that the earth is a woman and the sky around her is a man, and the sky protects her and allows her to nourish life. And if we can go back to some of those understandings, those are the most important things. You have to be there to just support the nurturing of life.
All right. Thank you, Aldo. And Greg, your thoughts on that?
By socially creating an example of masculinity, of brother's explanation of him reaching out, people reaching out to him. Jeremy, he said, you can Google me. I'm like Tiger. I'm the only one in the world. I'm super important, and I'm. You can Google my name, and tons of things will pop up. I mean, teasing in a healthier way about who we are as men, and not meaning to hurt Brother Jeremy's feelings or to make him seem less important, but and teasing it in healthier ways to essentially just get along with each other, to keep relationships mutually healthy, mutually nonviolent, and to let him know that you can hold me accountable at any time, any given moment.
All right. Thank you for that. And Jeremy, a.k.a. Tigger, go ahead.
That's been one of my long-running training jokes forever that I still love to use. But, yeah, I think when you look at the whole Hollywood issue, the Harvey Weinstein, how many men sat back and did nothing? And how much of this big roll-up becomes a big thing and creates this chain reaction. That's one of the things to be healthy men, that we can bond together as men and say, what do we do? And if a handful of those men did something 20 years ago, I think there would have been something a lot more different. We do take risks. When you start doing this work, you stand up, you speak, you lose something. And that's in the status of other men. And so that's one of the things that you have to accept and take that risk, because you're going to lose things, and that's just the reality. But what the benefit is going to be for you as a person, you're not going to carry that, oh, I should have said something feeling. And then you can be proud of your community and change when you see it occurring.
And Jeremy, finally, any special call to our elders to be a part of this?
I think our elders can teach us a lot. We're at that cusp where it is a challenge, and we hear this many times because of that boarding school era and colonizations, where we have some of the elders who are at that, who are about to pass, who didn't have that opportunity to embrace the culture. And so there's that time of regret that's part of that. So even having that conversations where we can connect and say, how is it that we change it and capture what pieces that they have, and also participate. That's one of the things that we don't do so well anymore, is that we just don't go out and visit with our elders. And so sometimes we have elders, and we do have a lot of elders who have that elder role, who have the knowledge and spiritual connection and all that to really guide us. And sometimes we have mean old people. And we have to connect even with the mean old people, because they have something to offer us and of value. And so we may not like those people, but we got to talk to them as well, because there's a lesson in that they have there.
All right. Have you hugged your elder today? I can't wait to hug mine later on and wish her a happy 94th birthday. Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure and an honor to visit with you, hear your thoughts. And folks, thanks again for tuning in. Thanks to our guests, Greg Greatcloud, Aldo Sione, Jeremy Neville Sorrell. Also thanks to Dallas Goldtooth. And you can search for him on Facebook and watch the discussion he helped organize on this topic. Please tune in tomorrow when we take the show down the road to the Indigenous Comic-Con 2. We're broadcasting live from the event at the Isleta Pueblo Casino and Resort. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, working to empower K-12 schools to strengthen health and safety policies through the School Health Index self-assessment. Schools with 50% or more American Indian or Alaska Native student enrollment are eligible to participate and receive funding. Information available by emailing Jamie McDaniel at jmcdaniel@aaip.org. Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.